This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
Terror on Wall Street, a book written by one of my guests, Ken Ead, with us today, is a lot more than a story of terror attacks by Middle Eastern terrorists. It is a story told in multiple ways of how Wall Street has inserted itself into the life of the American people, co-opting the way they save money, receive pensions, buy a house, invest in their retirement, and various other critical areas of their lifestyle. We're joined in this analysis of the present economic situation, partially as reflected in this book, by Sarah Westall, host of Business Game Changers on the Conscious Business Radio Network. Good morning again, Ken and Sarah.
Good morning or good afternoon, right?
Well, for me, it's still, you're right. It just moved into noon. I want to ask you, Sarah, one of the reasons I brought you into this and I'm bringing you into some of our shows is the kind of thing that you do in Business Game Changers. I wonder if you could say a little bit about your program.
Well, my program brings, we talk about big issues, disruption, and innovation. So I bring on leaders and cutting edge people in business and politics and society to really dive into the issues. For example, the person that I have coming on Monday was the commanding officer at the NYPD who was in charge of dealing with crises. And he dealt with 9/11. He dealt with Hurricane Sandy and the 2003 blackout. So really great, interview. And then the one I have on, I think I have it on right now with, I had Daniel Lentz and then the World War III one right now with Bruce Gagnon. And he is an expert on military affairs and what's going on in how we dominate space with our military and how we win wars with that. He's just an expert on that. And then, I bring on experts in all different areas. I have had the chief strategist for JP Morgan, one who was in charge of all strategy for JP Morgan on, and he comes on regularly to talk about what's going on with the markets. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. I look for the best people I can find that really can get to the meat of it. And they might not be the most famous, but I try to look for the experts.
Well, that's good. And we're definitely dealing with a disruptive type of paradigm now, are we not?
Oh, absolutely. People don't know really what's going on. I had Gwyneth Shotwell on a few weeks ago, who's the president of SpaceX. And so much of what's going on, and people don't realize it, is the development of our military and space and how we're dominating in that direction. And we have, I think, 15 spaceports, and there's another 15, something like that, in the works right now. So what's going on there? There's just so many developments. And energy, with oil backing the dollar, it's pretty crazy all the different things that are going on technology-wise and how that gap is not only displayed based on the wealth gap, which is very obvious in what we're talking about right now, but there's also a knowledge gap, which is pretty huge.
Well, we're going to go into that right now. Just in response in regards to Wall Street, for the average investor who wants to get a good return, he's crippled by two elements. As Ike Pendleton tells Snooki in Harry's classroom in Terror on Wall Street, the book that Ken has written, let me quote. First, talking about the average investor who's looking for the money, First, this is lack of information on how to invest in marketable securities, including his almost religious faith in what his broker tells him. A second problem lies in what goes on in his mind when he's faced with the decisions that must be made during the investment process. In my opinion, says Ike, I believe the worst enemy of the investor is that fellow whom he sees in the mirror as he shaves every day. Neuroeconomics is a relatively new field where economists study how the mind, specifically the limbic system, works to mislead us when we are confronted with sensory signals that take over our brains when we make financial decisions. Ken, we've been discussing this a little bit, but could you go more into the actual decision-making sequence that is determined by the activities of the limbic system as described by Ike?
Sure. I think if you just imagine yourself being confronted by your, not confronted, being advised by your broker to go into an investment that has a potential for a very high return. The potentials for very high return come with higher risk, of course. So like Sarah said before, their average investor doesn't really have the cash to be able to handle these high-risk investments. But the broker, as Sarah mentioned, is basically a salesman trying to make money, and he doesn't really know what he's doing either. So if you're offering someone a high return, the studies in neuroeconomics have shown that people will take the risk to get more. So simply by offering this high-risk investment that has the potential for the high return, the broker is appealing to your emotional brain, and the limbic system is basically what's influencing you to make this decision rather than any rational factors that you should be considering.
Well, you know, we mentioned before that possibly the dynamics of the instinctive mind are also involved in politics. Does this, in either of your minds, does this in any way equate with the way people are relating to the candidates who are running these various campaigns and having these debates?
That's a great question. Well, I obviously there's something going on with both Trump and with
Rubio?
Bernie Sanders.
Oh,
well,
yes.
With all of them. Well, Rubio.
Yeah.
you have to laugh with that whole thing. I know Rubio is really upset with Trump, and it's back and forth. Rubio got pretty worked up over Trump, and Trump is just, you know, and I watched Cruz, and Cruz was really, for people who watched that, Cruz was more presidential, actually, than what he reacted. He was trying not to laugh half the time because it was funny, but he didn't get worked up. But I mean, if you look at how people are backing Bernie Sanders, Trump, even Hillary Clinton, it's all, a lot of this is all emotional based, and they're marketing based on that reptile brain that we're talking about. They know that. That's what that's what campaigns are now, because they, like you said earlier, you only have 30-second sound bites, so you're not getting into the depth. You know, most people aren't like us, really diving in, trying to understand things. Most people base it on those 30-second sound bites. So how are you going to sway somebody to vote for you unless you get to the marketing things that work?
Yeah, right? And this is basically, it's very much the same dynamic involved in any kind of advertising, right?
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
So we're kind of... Our politics, our consumer purchases are programmed by television, and now our consumer choices, our political choices are now controlled by television. So people have often compared our era to George Orwell's 1984. Where the actual consequences of all this programming leads to the complete eradication of any kind of freedom, any kind of citizens' rights. So it's rather a critical situation when so many people are controlled by their limbic system.
Well, yeah, and if you use their money to, you know, democracy, when it becomes fully mature, supposedly, this is the theory, is that you use their money to control them through propaganda and the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing a good job.
Well, yeah. The rise of Donald Trump is a good example of propaganda being used, and the mainstream media is actually saying what the hell's going on, because they're not used to this. They're used to going with the mainstream politicians and how they control the media. And now we got someone who comes up and is using all these sound bites, like you said, and he's an expert at it. Throw the guy out. I mean, people are upset. They want something to happen, and he's offering that.
Well, and that's also the rise of the internet, right? And we're getting all sorts of different. So the mass media doesn't have full control over the media like they used to. So they're losing control with the internet. And then we also have, like you were saying, with Germany and when Hitler came aboard. I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler by any means, but it creates a extreme polarization, and so it creates a vacuum for someone to fill. People are thirsty, hungry for somebody to fill that vacuum for them. And so now you've got all these factors. They don't know what to do because we've never had an internet before, right? It's kind of a new renaissance of information. And then we have all this chaos going on in the markets and war and all these things. And so you get somebody like Donald Trump who just says it like it is. And he's not very polished in that way, but he's just saying it like it is. And I think people are just so hungry for truth and transparency that they're following him, you know?
Yeah, I've noticed. What I would like to do now is have a break with a song by Patricia Welch, and which will put us more at ease with everything that's going on.
Patricia Welch is clearly one of the most accomplished singers living today. Recently, she created a wonderful CD set called Great Entertaining, Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia. We have two complete shows with Patricia, show number 4, Evolution of a Singer, and show number 14, Cocktails with Patricia. You can find them at our Threshold Radio archives at VegasOnNetRadio.com and YouTube. Here's one of her songs. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welch for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
And this is Johnny back with Sarah Westall and Ken Ead, discussing the problems that we have about Wall Street. As an example, one of the great problems is described very powerfully in a new film called The Big Short, was the way the mortgage industry contributed to the basket of Wall Street greed that eventually blew up in America's face. Did either of you guys or both of you see The Big Short?
Yeah, I saw it. That was a great movie.
I thought
I didn't see it.
I saw it twice. I got to recommend it to you, Ken.
I laughed so much.
I really enjoyed that movie. It sort of confirmed everything I think about reality now.
He comes walking. There's a bubble. You remember he's going, they went to check out in Florida to see if there was a bubble, and he comes right, there's a bubble. You would like that movie. That was he's the guy from The Office.
They're going to different houses, to see what's going on with these houses that are not, you know, having trouble moving, and people have been leaving, and, you know.
And the stripper
has, like,
that's
not, that's
like
not the guy who's looking for a stapler in The Office, right?
Oh, no, that's The Office movie. You know, The Office with, what is his name?
Oh, yeah, Jack? Yeah, The Office TV show, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Got it.
I should know his name. I'm just, it's escaping me right now.
At one point, it became fashionable to ignore the reality of mortgage borrowers' pocketbooks, and loans for housing became extraordinarily easy. Further, the houses were bought and sold quite easily, eventually inflating the prices of real estate to an extremely high level. Then Wall Street took these loans and securitized them, bundling up into nice little packages. These packages were then sold as securities. Further, as I understand, these packages then were protected by derivatives, a kind of insurance in the form of security that protected the investor from a default on these packages, like a security inside of a security inside of a security. This type of collaboration between the real estate industry and Wall Street led to catastrophic results for America and helped contribute to a worldwide catastrophe in 2008. Is anything like this going on now, Ken?
Well, yeah, the same type of things going on. The big time bomb right now is derivatives, as you've mentioned.
What is the figure on that? I've heard some extraordinary figures about how much is going on money-wise.
The notional amount's like over $700 trillion, which is almost 10 times the worldwide gross domestic product. And, you know, the banks don't even have the assets to satisfy a failure like that.
Sarah, what do you
think? It's just mind-boggling. Yeah, it's still going on, and in fact, they've taken it up a notch. I mean, they're doing it on different products and now too, you know, not just home mortgages. So it's, I don't know. We don't learn. I guess if you bail out the banks and you bail out their derivatives the first time, they have to learn the hard way, right? And I also think a lot of people just want to make money. The one thing I noticed in The Big Short, which was really a really good, well portrayed, is how they showed the revolving door between the government agencies that are supposed to regulate and the investment houses. And they showed how not only did they not regulate, they don't even really know. They weren't really on top of what they were supposed to do, and they were more interested in getting in with the big firms so that they can get a leg up on their own career. And mm-hmm. I really think that is, and that's what's happening not only at the top levels, but all the way through the system, right? And all the different levels. And that's the scary part.
It's happening at every level of industry. The revolving door is the phenomenon where the industry is actually regulating itself. And so instead of regulation, we have easing of regulation that allows industry to make more money.
Yeah. And the greed.
For example, in the chemical industry, we've got the EPA and the FDA, which are basically controlled by the chemical companies now because of the revolving door.
Well, and it gets worse when the FDA is, for medical purposes, the FDA is controlled by pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when the pharmaceutical, the big investors are on the boards of the medical schools. And so, you know, there are a lot of good people in the system. My sister's a doctor and you know, there's more doctors now in seeing psychiatrists and getting help because they can't really wow.
because keeping them from committing suicide.
Because they can't take care of their patients the way they want to. And so they're in this awful situation where they are not being able to care for patients. And so it's really causing distress amongst them because most of them are not in it for greed. Yeah, sure, they might have went in it because it's a good salary and stuff, but most of them get in there and want to care for patients, but they're not able to.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I would say that the limbic system may play a part in some of the medical education, because what do you think when you hear a pharmaceutical commercial, and while they're showing the people on swings and having barbecues and having a great time getting well, when they're discussing at least, you know, two ways that they can get crippled, paralyzed, or completely killed by the end of the commercial.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, I want that, man. I want to get rid of my insomnia. I might die in my sleep, or my arm might fall off.
There is a place for that, right? I mean, if you have a crippling disease, you'll take the risks. But it's when we're not looking at, we're throwing out and not putting funding towards things to solve the problems in the first place, you know, to get to the source of the problem, because there's no money in that. That's where the issues are.
Well, I'm pointing out to the fact that the advertising, as graphic as this discussion is still powerful enough to program these people to thoughtlessly go out and buy some of these things that they shouldn't buy. And then the lawyers come on the advertising how they can get compensation from. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I think you're talking also about the fear factor. I mean, it's a big motivation in a lot of what we're doing now is you know, we're giving up our civil liberties because we fear we're not safe, or we fear we're going to get this and that, so we need a drug to instead of eating right, we're trying to find the drug that's going to solve the latest symptoms.
Yeah.
I want to get back to the real estate crisis as presented in your book. In this case, it's presented by Snooki, but then further supplemented by Carlos Rodriguez. I'm not saying it properly, but anyway, he's another character in the book. Quote, Snooki says, "Whenever you guarantee a loan, you also open an opportunity for a capitalist to figure out a way to profit from the guarantee. Anyone who knows anything about investing knows that the higher the risk, the higher the expected return. Before we knew it, Wall Street was offering securities based on these guaranteed loans," which is what we've been talking about. Carlos then says, "That's right. Whenever you start out offering a situation without risk, you attract the attention of Wall Street and the financial services industry. Banks, for instance, under the Glass-Steagall Act, were prevented from getting into the housing finance business. Banks lobbied for years to have this restriction removed, and after 20 years and some $300 million later, they succeeded. The $300 million they spent bought the votes they needed to repeal the legislation." Is that just fiction?
No, it's not. No, it's absolute fact.
It's pretty amazing. $300 million, 20 years later, and what I think maybe one of the greatest flaws, or you know, in our system, the greatest cracks in our system was developed by that destruction of that Glass-Steagall Act. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. And, you know, we've got people like Hillary Clinton talking about bringing that regulation, those regulations or some form of them back, which, you know, I think probably needs to happen. It's probably one of the reforms that we need to have.
Well, one of the most interesting things about our economy is the massive printing of money by the Federal Reserve. In Harry's classroom, the class discusses the problem. Harry says, I had a front row seat in 1998 when Wall Street bailed out the failing hedge funds. We missed the bullet back then, but we never learned, because 10 years later, as a result of the burst of the housing bubble, the big banks were on the verge of failure. But we just printed more dollars and bailed them out. We won't be able to print ourselves out of this next crisis, I'm afraid. Sarah, give us a bit of a picture of the policy of quantitative easing, a euphemism for the printing of massive money that's been going on for years. And do you think that it's going to end, the value of that, at some point?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of fiat currency, is that the value ends when you print so much that it no longer has value, right? Well, people, money only has value because we say it does, right? Now, a fiat currency, whereas a non-fiat currency that's backed by something, let's say it's backed by gold, or it can be backed by anything of value. If you have, let's say you have 100 pounds of gold and you have $100, and that's a direct correlation, then each dollar is worth a pound of gold, right? And that's not, I'm just trying to explain how a regular currency is backed by gold. With fiat currency, right now there's nothing backing it. So if you just keep printing it, eventually people are going to be like, well, this doesn't have any value anymore. Because, you know, if you look at supposedly the assets of the United States is backing our currency, our fiat currency. That's what they say, the full faith of the United States government. But if you keep printing it to the point where there's trillions of dollars, and the assets get chopped up to such little pieces, each dollar has no value anymore. Does that make sense?
Does it mean that I'll have to take a big barrel full of money to get just a few potatoes?
Well, I mean, that's what they had to do in the other area. When fiat currency explodes, when it collapses, that's what happens, because they can't raise the value. They can't print them fast enough. And so, like, people would pay for their dinners in Germany. They would pay for their dinners before they ate, because by the end of the dinner, it would be like twice as much.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take another little break here with some information about the incredible compositional artistry of my friend and colleague, Russian composer Edgar Arens.
I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Arens for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
You know, Sarah, a lot of people speak about, including the Fed, the so-called value of inflation. And some pretty strange things happen in Germany because of it. What do you think about the reasons for the inflation in Germany before, right after World War One?
Well, I think there's could be a lot of correlation to today. And if you recall, Germany lost, we all know that Germany lost World War One, and the Allies put in place a treaty that made Germany pay for the damages of that occurred all over Europe and, you know, due to the war. And it was thought that it would take them a century to pay off those debts, right, for Germany too. So in order for Germany to get out of that problem, I mean, they don't want to be slaves to the world for 100 years, right? And mm-hmm. to get out of that problem, if they hyperinflate their currency, then they can get out of that problem very quickly, right?
Because the value of the money is so much, there's a lot of money that they can pay, but it's worth much less.
Yeah. So let's say that they owe $1 million, but they only have 1,000. Well, let's inflate our dollars to 1 million, and then we just pay it off, even though it's worthless, but at least we can pay off our debt. And what happened, though, is there was a lot of consequences to that internally, because the people in the know, the people with the money, they figured out how to safeguard their own assets. And they came out of it well off, right? They just converted their money to different currencies and things. The problem is the average German person lost everything they had. And so that created an environment that was... that's what created the environment that was ripe for the rise of Hitler, right? When you have a lot of desperate people. And the reason why the Jewish people were so persecuted were because they were the class that they were such a small percentage of the population, but they had, and like they were 3%, I think, of the, 1%. They were a very small percent of the population, but they had 98-99% of the owned of the, you know, big corporations, the banks and the financial sector. So they came out, majority of those people came out of it okay. Now, the average Jewish person did not, you know, they were just like normal people. They didn't have any part of that. They're not wealthy like the, you know, they were just like every other person. But and we can't mistake it. One thing I want to say is anybody in that position, whether they're Jewish or not Jewish or whether whatever nationality they are, people who are in power, who own the banks, who own the big, large corporations, are going to figure out how to protect themselves and get themselves out of problems, right? So it's a mistake to pin it on one race of people or one nationality. But that's what happened. And so it rose, you know, it created that perfect storm where Hitler rose. But we're in that same situation with the extreme debt. And how do we get out of our debt problems? And it's almost a worldwide phenomena of how do we get out of our world.
Well, that's partially the reason for the printing of all this money.
Yes, exactly.
It hasn't actually reached the point where the American people are really feeling the power of inflation, but rather maybe more like deflation.
Well, it's because of the deflationary pressure that's going on because of the recession. Inflation hasn't happened, but it will. I mean, it's only a matter of time.
You know, Lord Keynes went to the peace conference that was resolving some of the problems after World War I, and he said this. This is Lord Keynes. Lenin is said to have declared that the best way to destroy the capitalist system was to debauch the currency. By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. By this method, they not only confiscate, but they confiscate arbitrarily. And while the process impoverishes many, it actually enriches some, like you were talking about, Sarah. The sight of this arbitrary rearrangement of riches strikes not only at security, but a confidence in the equity, the existing distribution of wealth. So exactly. In this case, people are using capitalism, then it actually paves the way for something really dangerous. In our case, maybe some kind of corporate fascism, which is, you know, corporate fascism and communism in the most, in the sort of Stalinist sense, they're very close to each other. You know, whether the state owns supposedly everything and there's a communist class or there's just a few corporations that control everything, it really kind of feels the same at the very bottom.
Once you become extreme fascism, right, when the corporation's extreme, because then they keep innovation from occurring. I mean, we're seeing in certain, like the pharmaceutical, what we talked about, if we have innovations in certain medical fields, they don't allow that to occur. Or if we have energy alternatives, they're not allowing that to occur. And so that's where, the technology field, there's a lot, all sorts of innovations because there isn't a stronghold on that yet. But we're seeing it in a lot of industries.
Well, in Terror on Wall Street, the class presents its case to the Senate Finance Committee. I think it's really interesting, a really interesting scene. Snooki, after hearing a long, winding speech, speaks rather irreverently to the chairman of the committee. She says, "Let's face the facts. This financial collapse has been a long time coming. The banks that each of you gentlemen cater to have been allowed to become too big. Not too big to fail, as you've said in the past, but destined to fail because they are too big. They were smaller than a failure of one or even several of them could be contained. Now, young lady, let me finish. The brokers working for our largest financial service firms have plundered the average investor's portfolio, ravaged their bank accounts, and have destroyed the lives of our people, while the fat cats in Washington ride the coattails of the oligarchy's money grab. Rather strong stuff, Ken. Is that where we really are?"
Well, if you believe former President Jimmy Carter, who said last year that the United States is no longer a democracy, it's an oligarchy, yes. I think that's where we are. I mean, you know, we're talking before, Sarah mentioned, the financial elite calling the shots, and it's basically their money gets legislation passed. People from their own industry, as we talked about before, get appointed to regulate the industry, which relaxes regulation and makes it easier for them to make more money. But the people that lose are the people who they're supposed to be protecting. And they pay for the advertising to elect whomever they want to put into office. So I think, that's what we really are right now.
Well, we're talking now again about Terror on Wall Street, and Harry Mason, Professor Mason, in the classroom is making a rather strong indictment of the current system, still believing there's hope to save the economy. Let's listen to what he says. He says, "Of course not. We have to act now while we still have a functioning economy to save. We've known for over 50 years that the financial industry has been methodically cheating the public by charging them for services that are worthless, as demonstrated by countless peer-reviewed studies by academia and their students. And we've known for at least 12 years that the banks are trading in almost unregulated and risky derivatives with notional values larger than the world economy. I believe that the banks and financial service industry take more than their fair share of our profits by using unfair business tactics. Now appears that our entire financial system has taken far more risk than is warranted by its capital structure, and this will lead to a market crash affecting economies worldwide. As for what we do, that part is up to you. I realize that Harry is talking to his classroom, but to both of you, is it up to us, the American people, and what on earth can we do? Sarah?
Well, it is up to the American people while we still have the opportunity to vote, although we have to get the average person or a larger percent of the average person to understand and to speak up. We have a paralysis in this country, and I don't know what percent it takes in order to make change, but, you know, maybe 8%, something like that. But we need to get enough people who have an understanding. And, you know, ignorance can be pretty dangerous. If they get a partial understanding, they're going to follow something. That's where an extreme leader can come in and take over, because ignorance can, where you know some of it, and then you just follow somebody who's charismatic, who's going to lead you on a pretty evil path. And so it takes a lot of courage at this point to make changes. We need major structural changes. And I actually think, you know, what happened with the hyperinflation in Germany is almost like akin to bankruptcy, you know, where you wipe out all your debts and they take everything from you and you start over. And it's just how they dealt with it was kind of an unethical way of dealing with it. And they didn't educate people on what was going on. But we really should be doing something akin to that, because do we really want to be in a situation where we're a slave to our debts for a century? You know, I mean, we're in that situation right now.
You know, when they got out of debt, when the hyperinflation was over, they issued a currency that I believe was backed by real estate in Germany.
Yeah, I mean, they backed it by something of value. There's nothing right. wrong with that.
Well, Ken, having written the novel, what do you think we can do?
Well, I agree with Sarah. We need structural changes. And basically, we're talking about changes that have to occur with legislation. And that's just not going to happen right now, because the people who are basically running our Congress people are the ones that are causing the problem. So we need people to be more informed, as Sarah said. And like we've mentioned on other shows, Johnny, you and I,
yeah.
It really comes down to education. And you can't get all this the legislation we're talking about. I mean, we need to bring back Glass-Steagall. We need to revise the Dodd-Frank Act. We need to revise the Securities and Exchange Act, the Federal Reserve Act, the Lobbying Disclosure Act. I mean, we're talking about major changes that are going to put the people who are making the financial elite right now, you know, in a tailspin, and they don't want it to happen. And the only way to happen is to get back control of our own democracy, basically, which only is going to happen by people being more informed.
Well, there's going to have to be some big things done, and I'm
like Sarah said, there has to be a big event that just forces all this to happen, which I hope is not going to be the case. But I don't see. You know, well, maybe. I mean, I'm kind of encouraged by, even though it's kind of weird and funny and a little bit scary, I'm kind of encouraged by, you know, the people getting all involved in the political process, the average person. And, you know, we've got Bernie Sanders' rise on one side and Donald Trump on the other side, basically, because people are pissed off. They're worried. They want something to be shaken up. And these guys are both talking about shaking stuff up.
Well, you know, and I wonder, this is the first election where they actually talked, front runners actually talked about auditing the Federal Reserve. If there was transparency where we actually could audit the Federal Reserve to see what was really going on, mm-hmm. then you know, I wonder if something like that would be able to trigger getting the power of our democracy back in the hands of Congress and the people. I don't know, but something like that would have to happen where people could be educated, because frankly, none of us are really educated on what's really going on. And the Monetary Exchange Fund, that's another thing that's very secretive. And you can't make good decisions without knowing what's going on.
It is, and that the IMF right now is the one that's basically solving all the financial crises in the European currencies. When one of the Euro nations starts to go down the tubes, they're the ones coming in and bailing them out. But like you said, we don't know the dynamics of that organization either.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to play a song by Zave Nathan and Bonnie Blazak, which I think if you really sort of expand your mind, you can wonder if they are really talking about the Federal Reserve. Here's a clip of their song called Yes.
Succeeding look like they will fail. And if I see blue skies, I need to watch for hell. Honey's tail backwards is why you know. First you say you're staying, then away you go. On and off is giving me, I must confess, that between you and I, I work my way to YES.
Yep, I think they are talking to the Federal Reserve. But anyway, from your book, Ken, I take it that if Wall Street is not involved in physical terrorism, it is in general waging a fiscal or financial war on the American people, making them constantly psychologically facing a threat of personal, national, even global disaster. Isn't this induction of grave psychological fear in the mass population a form of terror? Does Wall Street, by its current nature, need to provide this kind of disservice to the American people? Or is there a better way of actually helping America and the world sell stocks and bonds and other financial services? We have talked about the U.S. economy being saved. Can it actually be saved without saving Wall Street? Sarah?
Well, Wall Street is the financial juice for all of our corporations, or for corporations that are on Wall Street. So I think that we have to separate out the investments for companies, which is still important, and the investment firms that manage that. Does that make sense? The investment firms that manage that need to be completely restructured, and how we go about doing it. That control, we can't have criminal behavior. We can't have, but we still need to have means to invest in corporations, right? So we have to decouple what that means and how we go about doing that.
Ken, tell us your idea. What should we need to save Wall Street? Would we do it like Sarah suggests?
Oh yeah, we can't live without this engine. I mean, it's basically we're depending on it. But I think what she said, these investment firms have been preying on the average investor for years, and they don't care whether, you know, the little guy makes money or loses money, as long as they make a commission. They're basically salesmen. I think a couple things have to be done. Number one, they have to have more responsibility toward the investor. Brokers have to be fiduciaries. They've got to be tested. They've got to have higher responsibilities. And I think the other thing is we've got to close that revolving door and stop the industry from regulating itself. That's the only way it's going to change.
Well, and also the corporations that are the companies, the businesses that need the money so that we can invest in innovation, the companies themselves are victims a lot of times. A big investment firm will bring a company to market, and the company might get $100 million and the investment firm gets $150 million. You know, I mean, think of how much more that company could have done if that money went in the pockets of the business. And so there's a lot of issues there, too. They're victims, too, a lot of these businesses. And those are the ones employing our people.
Well, Ken, now we're reaching sort of the end of the road here. Or maybe it's going to be the beginning, hopefully. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how to procure Terror on Wall Street and somewhat about your other two thriller series, which I've enjoyed some of them and we've discussed on this program before.
Yeah. Well, you can purchase all my books, my legal thrillers, my spy thrillers, and Terror on Wall Street on Amazon.com. Or you can go to my website, kennetheade.com, KennetheAde.com, and they're all there.
Sarah, why don't you tell us a little bit how to find Business Game Changers?
Yeah, you can find Business Game Changers. We're all over the place, but we air on Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time in New York, Rhode Island, and Connecticut on WBLQ. And then I also have my website, sarahwestall.com, which you can get all my podcasts there. All the radio shows are converted to podcasts. And then we're on 90 plus channels as well that you can get us on all the popular podcast channels. And I believe I'm also on YouTube through Transformation Talk Radio and Conscious Business Radio. But I am going to, if you let me, Johnny, I am going to take this program that we did today and re-air it. Obviously mine's only an hour and yours is 2 hours, so it'll take parts of it. But I'd love to re-air this.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That'd
this was
terrific.
A fun program, Johnny. No offense to you, but it was great to have this the dynamic going on with Sarah on the show. It was great.
Yeah,
well,
I had fun.
I hope we'll be able to do it again. I'm going to, first of all, have a little bit of a promo for Threshold Radio, which is now in its 25th show. And then we will go to go out with a wonderful rendition of Patricia Welch of the classic called Evergreen. And thank you all for coming. I hope to see you again really soon.
If you like Threshold Radio, a program which deals with core issues affecting our personal, political, and spiritual lives, and advocates the creation of an enlightened, informed citizenry, not only in America, but throughout the world, then you might think of supporting both your product and business and our message by advertising on our show. All programs are archived and are supported in various ways, including social media, our outreach being broadcast weekly on VegasAllNetRadio.com, a very advanced internet broadcasting station, but also archived directly on our websites on YouTube and in SoundCloud. We believe in time we will have a very broad outreach. Through New Galaxy Enterprises, our parent company, we can create a wide range of marketing and advertising components to complement your advertising on Threshold Radio and increase your outreach in many creative and exciting ways. If interested, just go to www.thresholdradio.com and fill out a contact form with your interest. That's www.thresholdradio.com.
Certain love would grow.